Hi, Karen.
Hi, Joanne. How are you doing?
Okay. How are you?
The sun is coming in and I love it. I love it. Days that are taste of spring. I just, wow.
I know. You know, last year I was, I would do this outside, you know, and I can't wait to be able to do that again. Sit out on the deck.
Have you been doing this the whole year?
Yeah. I didn't start immediately. I probably started maybe a month after it had been going on. I can't remember exactly. I kept wanting to and forgetting. So, but of course, at that time it was at noon.
That's right. That's right. We made some shifts. Well, here we are.
We are. So, yeah. It's unbelievable, huh?
Hi, Phyllis and Ellen.
Yeah.
Hi, Karen.
You got your haircut.
Carol, you're here.
Thank God.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
How's everybody doing?
I'm still waking up.
Yeah, me too.
I woke up early.
Oh. Not me.
Yeah. We've been going to bed late and sleeping late and everything screwed up.
And we're going to lose an hour this weekend, right?
Yeah.
Oh, is this the weekend? Yeah. Oh, that's too bad.
Bring forward.
Ellen, I want to talk to you about your, not on now, about your opinion about the schools and closing for the holidays.
Oh, my opinion. I have a different opinion than everybody else.
Well, that's why I'm curious.
You know, they were talking about it the other night. And I don't know if people realize Laura Zelman.
Yeah,
had to do with football. Like, do you remember with Laura Zelman, like 100 years ago, her kid, they stopped the football games on the holidays because of Laura did it single-handedly.
Right.
Wow. Right. I don't remember
that. It's so weird. I mean, Ellen Renard, I mean, you know, I mean, in New York, I was in elementary school when they were closing for, and that was a long time ago, closing for the Jewish holidays in my town.
Yeah.
Wasn't very Jewish, but the parents, I guess, got together. It was a small town too.
Right, there weren't enough teachers to
and the issue is not just it's not just Jewish holidays. It's
then it was
right. Yeah. It's the whole one Fairfax.
Right.
Yeah.
My daughter was in band in high school, and she failed because there was a band something on the day of her brother's bar mitzvah. And even though we told them when school started, the teacher failed her for the quarter.
Jeez.
We had kids a couple of years ago when Rosh Hashanah, one of the holidays was on Saturday and there was a big band competition. Mm-hmm. And we wrote letters on behalf of the kids because they were failed for not being there.
Yeah, it's unbelievable what still goes on.
Yeah. Hey, this is, you know, the 21st century. It's unbelievable.
Very narrow-minded people.
Yeah. So, the advantage at Herndon High School was Richard Bergman was Jewish, so that was a thing. But yeah, there was some issues my son had when he got nominated for Homecoming Prince or something, and the pictures were done on Yom Kippur afternoon.
Oh dear.
Oh yeah.
So let's put that aside for a moment.
Okay.
Are there all the recognizing that these are all the things that we carry, right? That's part of what we're thinking about, part of our practice, recognizing all the things that are pulling at us, even when we're in another situation. That's what we're practicing doing here. So, good morning. It's nice to see you.
Good morning.
You can hear me okay?
Good morning. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sounds okay this morning? Okay, good. Take a couple of breaths. Get settled in. You know, you're talking about something that upsets you. It like shifts your whole body. So, this week in Torah, our people are called to give presents with a TS, presents, gifts of the heart, the phrase that we see in Torah a lot is kol, actually four times in this week's Torah portion, that the gifts we should bring for the building of the Mishkan, the way we measure what we're supposed to bring is kol nadiv libo, by how your heart is moved. And so our ancestors were called to bring what they were able to the building of the tabernacle in the desert, at a time like they were in the desert. It was after slavery, right? I'm guessing they were physically impoverished, notwithstanding the gold and silver that Torah tells us they, quote, borrowed from Egypt before they left. And spiritually impoverished, right? We read over and over again that they weren't content. They were regularly whining to go back to a time of place and discomfort, merely because it was more familiar than the current place of uncertainty or discomfort in which they were finding themselves in that moment. We know that yearning. And I like, this is, I was thinking about this, of course, over the last few days. And then right before I came here, I read this editorial about nostalgia, which I have to go back and read like five more times. It's fascinating, in the New York Times today. So what would help find content? What would help us find contentment? We know that there are studies, lots and lots of studies, that show that opening ourselves to others, right? Opening our hearts in gratitude, offering help, right? Gaining a purpose, right? All of those, there are lots of studies that show that we can reduce our own anxieties, our own discontent, at least for a little while, when we shift the focus off of our own discomfort. The time that takes aside for a moment, but when we can even shift it within ourselves, we can let go of our own tightness a little bit. We can maybe for a moment stop clinging to all of our own narratives, distorted and real. And then in that moment, perhaps we can see that where we are right now is actually okay. That we have maybe accomplished something in that moment, helped something, added to something in the present. So I think about this project that God and Moses perhaps wisely gave the Israelites, the building of the Mishkan, right? They had this apostasy moment, this golden calf, totally distracted. And I think part of the building of the Mishkan is not actually just the physical, the physical doing of it, but to actually take a project that they have to be in touch with their own hearts, right? Kol nadiv libo, what you have to bring to it, you have to know in yourself what is within your heart, what in your ability to be able to bring. And when they do that, when we do that, can we appreciate our own efforts? Can we stop long enough to appreciate our own accomplishments? So as the world around us continues to change and unfold, and there's different experiences of nostalgia, you gotta go read this. It's gonna be in my mind now for like days, I think. And we are all anxious to return to, quote, what normal was, which is its own challenge. I'm struggling with what that will actually mean. What is normal? Do we want to be running from activity to activity again? Do we want to be, you know, this endless stream of doing, of the frantic rush that pushed us all along? So for a moment, I want us to sit and think, let's sit. So I'll tell you what we're gonna do in a minute. First, breathe. I feel like I'm already like. So just let the air flow, however your breath is. Notice places of restriction as you just let the breath go, because we can breathe without trying to breathe. Even when we're struggling to breathe, our bodies work at being able to breathe without us consciously having to do so. So notice if it's harder or easier, the airflow in and out. This won't be a long sit. I just want, I want you to raise to mind something you accomplished this week. It could be tiny, it could be huge. Just the first thing that comes to mind. Don't judge it. Just sort of let whatever bubbles up, bubble up. And as you see that thing that you did, finished, just be curious about it, look at what it was. And I just want you to notice, again, without judging yourself, what you did do or didn't do, or how you did it or how you didn't, how you did or did not sort of let yourself acknowledge that accomplishment. Did you rush past it? Did you sit with it for a moment? So what happened in the aftermath for you? Just for a moment. So as you continue to let that bubble around, so there's a story about a king who wished to move from his palace, but he feared that his enemies might take advantage and attack him and steal his treasures, and so he summoned his trusted general, and he said, "My friend, I have to move my palace, and I have to do so in 24 hours. You've been my trusted servant and friend. I don't trust anyone else but you to help me with this task. It's huge. You know the network of underground passages between this palace and the other. I need you to help me move my most treasured possessions safely. And if you do, I will give you and your family freedom, and you can retire from service, and you will be well rewarded. I will give you a portion of my wealth and my lands, and you'll be secure for generations to come." Big ask. So the day came when the move had to happen, and quickly and quietly, the general worked hard. He wasn't a young man, but he persisted in his efforts. He knew that the task had a short window, right? It had to be completed within those 24 hours, and after this, it would become unsafe to do his work. And with minutes to spare, he completed the job. He went to the king, who was delighted. The king was a man of his word and gave a portion of the possessions and the land and everything that he had promised to the general. The general went home, sat, surveyed his land, felt satisfaction that he could retire, that things were dealt with. And for that moment, he had a sense of completeness. And that's where the story ends. It's not the story we think, right? Do we know those moments? The moment where we actually stop? Not necessarily the happy ending, but just the pause to recognize it's kind of a silly story, but it's not. Like, we think that something else is going to happen. Like, the next thing has to happen. Do we ever get to that point, just for a moment, where we rest in that moment, in that sense of completeness, in that sense of having done something, a task being fulfilled, not just crossing it off the to-do list and moving on to the next one, but just being in that. And so one of the challenges, I think, of life before this, and maybe even still now, for some of us or all of us, is like that frantic rush through our tasks lists, right? Completing something, we rush from task to task. We move so that, you know, there's no one end of a task. It's just the invitation to start the next one, or your to-do list, like you don't even let it finish or leave it incomplete or just be with where it is. We have to keep going. And what would it be like if we could take a few seconds just to sit, to take stock, to realize we have completed something, not everything, but just something, right? How many times do we hear ourselves say, "Ugh, I got nothing done today"? How many of you have ever said, "Ugh, I got nothing done today"? Is that really true? Is that really true? You've not finished, you've not done anything? I don't believe that. You may not have gone to the place you expected to, desired to, planned to, but we've accomplished things each moment. And we generally say it when we're at our busiest, right? When we're actually doing so many things. And so can we use this practice just to like give ourselves some of that pause, maybe even some energy, some focus, some guidance to be able to continue and feel, because when you feel that sense of accomplishment, even for a moment, if you break something down, so, you know, I may put something on my to-do list that is this big, but it's got like 20 parts to it. Can I stop and acknowledge each of those steps that could in fact even energize me, focus me for the next, help me do things with greater ease, maybe efficiency, clarity? So if we can practice that, cultivating a sense of completeness, just like a glimmer, even in a moment, with little things in life, there might be a way then for us to allow our minds to not keep telling us that, okay, you're not there yet. Okay, you're not there yet. Like, we still have more. We still have more to do. Like, we're not, there's never a sense of fulfillment, of completeness. And instead of seeing like from here to here as what we have to do, to be able to see from here to here, okay, I got here. Okay, I got here. Okay, I got here. And find that in every moment, we're complete, even as tasks might continue to unfold in front of us. And so can we become more attentive to the details of our to-do list, right? So that we can not, so we don't lose sight of the so we're not always looking just at the bigger picture, a little bit of like the forest and the trees, right? So that we can see what's happening for us in each moment. So let's sit again, okay? And if you want to either bring the same moment we had back up or a different one, so I'm going to suggest that if the moment that arose for you, you notice that you didn't give yourself in that time any acknowledgement of what you accomplished, I might invite you to explore that again and see what might have shifted had you given yourself some acknowledgement for an accomplishment of being a sense of completeness in that moment. If you did give yourself that, and I think perhaps look at another moment and see if there are times when you rush through, and what would that be like to instead stop and say, wow, there are points along the way that I am whole. Because what we're doing otherwise is we're judging ourselves in some way for not being whole until we our brains, our doing brains, determine that that is what completeness is. What I'm inviting us to try and shift is a more ongoing sense of completeness to see in ourselves. Because when we are feeling incomplete, when we haven't finished what we told ourselves we had to do, there's a sense of emptiness, there's a sense of frantic, there's a sense of rush, and that can throw us off balance. And it will not help us see what we have ahead that we do want to accomplish with as much clarity as might benefit us. Okay. So just like let things arise. And if you find yourself in that place of judging yourself, I'm going to invite you to let go of that voice of judgment. And if you find yourself, you know, thoughts kind of wandering as you're raising a situation and it goes to the other things now that you have to do, recognize that that is part of our human mind and allow yourself to come back and just be with this particular experience. some mindfulness teachers talk about the doing mind versus the being mind. So I just want to say a couple of things, just a little bit about that. So doing, the doing part of our mind is like, they're both really important. The doing part of our mind performs really well in solving problems, right? And getting things done. We need to do that. It's powerful in helping us perform tasks in, and like in focusing on the gap between where we are and where we want to be, which is great when we need to get a particular task done. But it can get in our way when we allow it to act, or when we apply it to where we are inside, right? To when we focus on, when we allow that part of our consciousness to focus on the gap we perceive, or the gaps we perceive, right? The gaps that we create for ourselves, the shoulds. I'm here, but I should be. Right? I feel this, but I should feel this. I should be happier. I should feel better. I should be whatever. And when our doing mind does that, it generally doesn't work. It generally makes us feel worse, right? We feel that we've missed the mark in ourselves somehow. And it's our own judging mind that's doing that to us. So the experience of the other part of our consciousness to cultivate is this experience of being, of like, oh, this is where I am right now. This is my present. This is, and with a sense of acceptance, not that we don't want to grow, change, do whatever, but when we create that gap for ourselves, we hamper ourselves in terms of growing in whatever way we want to be growing. It's the same with the to-do list, right? When we see the gap of I've only done this much, as opposed to feeling a sense of accomplishment where we are right now. So it's the same with the doing. And we say, oh, I have to be here. I should have done this much. So it works in both ways, where on the one hand, in order to accomplish something, we need to see what that gap is in a task. But even without practicing in tasks, that sense of accomplishment of also, I am here right now, I got this much done, like, and just recognizing that helps us to then move forward in task, in our inner life, in our spiritual selves. It's also recognizing, here is where I am right now, without actually judging what I should be. And then allowing that being to, we get clarity, we might not be content, we might say, well, you know, I'm feeling sad right now. I'm feeling anxious right now. Without judging what we should be, when we can even just be in that present moment, sometimes some of the stuff that is bubbling up, we can see it. It may or may not dissipate, but if we're with it, the clarity of what we should do next, rather than what we are telling ourselves we should do next with judgment, allows us a little bit more freedom of choice. So I'm intrigued back to what the Israelites are doing this week in Torah, right? This building a mishkan, building a tabernacle, building a sacred space, right? It's not just like building a Lego set. So like there's a sacred task, right? Accomplishing things, right? A sense of doing something with purpose, which is great. Like that's important, and it's really, it's so valuable in its time and place. So we never abandon that experience of doing. But with a mindful, spiritual inner practice, we're also striving to, wanting to gain skills, inner skills, so that we have choices, so that we can activate, engage that doing part of our mind when we choose. We can make space for the uncomfortable emotions when they arise, and perhaps even explore them. They look at them with compassion for ourselves, with courage. there's the reason that we spend time thinking about and practicing, like noticing our mind wandering and our mind coming back, is that experience of mind wandering often pulls us into our doing mind, our noticing the gaps of where we, between where we are and we think, and where we think we should be, right? There's like so much, I think of it as maybe like a fine line between, on the one hand, like daydreaming, right? Imagining, creating, all wonderful, like really important to take time for those things to arise. But so often our minds wandering are just our thoughts being pulled to worries, to shoulds, to regrets, to troubles, to things like that. And so being able to sit, to take time to be curious about what is going on inside of us, to even look at what we're doing, to notice moments of accomplishment, to notice where we still want to be, right? It gives some purpose. We are reminded and taught, right? We have to give the gifts of our hearts for the materials to build whatever it is that we are building. In other words, we have to be moved. I like to think that we have to let our hearts be open to be more in the present, both to accomplish the things that we really want to accomplish on our task list in the best way possible without frantic and rush and beating ourselves up, and to be more in the present of wherever we are in feeling, however we're feeling, so that we can embody that and then be able to see what will come next for us, or what we will choose, how we will choose to be next. You know, when the present is uncomfortable, I would say that most people's tendency without paying attention is just to like want to withdraw from the discomfort and move somewhere else to the future, sometimes to the past, right? I'm going to make a general statement too, that most, if not all of us, have a tendency to put off too many of the important things in our lives because of the rush we tend to live in right now. Nobody here has ever said, I'll catch up on sleep later on the weekend. Nobody here has, right, said, when the pandemic is over, I will. Okay. So this practice, we can give ourselves opportunities to shift that thinking, to be right where we are right now. I wonder if the part of the Israelites getting lost in the desert was actually because all they saw they had was the future. The present seemed like it was only about waiting for the future. The present can't be just our waiting for the future. Because when we do that, I think we don't make good we don't make the choices that are the best choices for us, because our choices are only relieving discomfort in the present, right? That's the golden calf. That was what the golden calf was, relieving the discomfort. Moses was gone, right? They didn't. So this building of a mishkan, the noticing, the being present to sacred tasks, the bringing of our hearts, right? That four times, kol nadiv libo, like what we have to do to be in this present has to be inside. We have to notice it. It's a shift to living in the present, even if it isn't what we expected, even if it wasn't what we wanted, even if it isn't what we imagined. So just being in this moment doesn't alleviate our difficulties, but it reveals them. And it brings us an awareness of all the things, right? The themes, the triggers, the narratives, the stories, the distractions, the striving, the autopilot. Also, that we can see our own landscape more clearly. So we're going to sit again, and this is going to be like back to basic mindfulness. I'm not going to give you any guidance of what you should or shouldn't think about. Only thing I'm going to offer to do is just to be present with the breath. And just not like clinging focus to your breath, but to just be with your breath. And when you notice your discomforts, physical, inner, just be, say like, oh, that's where I am right now. Come back to your breath. And when you notice that you've gone to your to-do list, know that it will be there. Recognize it, acknowledge it, smile at it. Come back to your breath. When all of a sudden you realize like you have no idea where your thoughts went, like, wow, how did I get there? Come back to your breath. No judgment. Just this practice of this back and forth of our distractedness, because the more we can practice that, the more we can recognize it when it happens in moments that maybe we didn't want that to happen, and we can choose. We can choose how to pay attention. So just finding your, how you need to sit, lie down, and to just be with your breath and this moment right now. So I'm going to finish with a poem I really like by Mary Oliver. It's called The Summer Day. You may know it. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Our gifts and balances of paying attention, of being in this moment, of recognizing that we live in this way of doing, and I don't know, in the coming hours and days, just paying attention to what we acknowledge in ourselves, how we balance between really being in the present moment and acknowledging an accomplishment in this moment, and how we can choose differently, practice choosing differently. Any thoughts or reflections?
When we were doing the mindfulness and we had to think about something that we had accomplished, so my first thought was, oh, great, I accomplished this. And as I thought about it, though, I thought, oh, great, you cleaned out the pantry, but why didn't you clean out the cupboards on top and next to it? So with so much for praise.
Right, even in the little things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wish you all a great day, great week, and early Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Weather today.
You too.
You too.
Wonderful to see
Take
you.
Take care, everybody.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. Very nice.
Thank you for the stories about
our yeah.
It was good things.